In the film that Justin Welby we watched, he mentioned lots of huge, big things that we were facing. But then I thought about all the additional, kind of smaller but very dramatic conflicts that we as a country have faced over the last 10 years. And I added to that huge list of big things lots of more specific things as well. I don't know if you can remember Brexit, do you remember that? That was slightly contentious, wasn't it? And then President Trump, again, slightly contentious, still going on. Then we had racism rearing its head in a really dramatic way with the death of George Floyd, and then we had Black Lives Matter, or All Lives Matter, or how do you sit in that? And then the whole thing about slavery and pulling down monuments of people who, historical figures from the past and all that kind of stuff, reared its head and was, again, hugely controversial. And then, of course, there was COVID just thrown in there, and what you should do and what you shouldn't do, and then what the government said and what the government did. And, you know, it was just a few things going on, weren't there? Enormous amounts of controversy. And with all of these things, the voices get louder and louder, don't they? We live in a place, really contentious stuff, where people express themselves in rather dramatic ways. Of course, the internet and social media don't help us with that. I'm not an internet or social media hater. I think you'd be foolish not to acknowledge that they can do lots of good things. But it's good to recognise how they influence our society as well, isn't it? In the old days, if you wanted to make some kind of public comment, you had to write to a newspaper. And it would take time to think about what you were going to say. And maybe you'd rewrite it a few times and you'd think, oh, will they publish this? No, I'll rewrite that bit. And then you'd send it, and then eventually it would get posted, maybe, if the editor thought it was good enough. These days you think, oh, my goodness, I'm going to write something, jot it down, off it goes. And then suddenly the whole world can read it instantly, and it's all gone. Straight, just like that. No rewriting to see if I'd said it the right way. And sadly, our instant default responses as humans often aren't quite as good as we like to think they might be. Maybe you've experienced that. People say things quickly without thinking and can cause tremendous harm. Not necessarily intentionally, but just because we're not thinking. No doubt social media being so impersonal encourages that. Don't know if you're a member of the Swanage Matters Facebook page, but it never ceases to amaze me how strongly people comment on the most random things. You'd think that, you know, their next-door neighbour had been murdered or something, the amount of aggro that comes out on this page about, I don't know, something ridiculous. But I'm sure that in person, people would never actually speak like that or say those kind of things. And then the way that the internet works is that the social media, the search engines and the algorithms give you more of what you look for or what you're talking about or that kind of thing. They act like an echo chamber, don't they? They just surround you with more and more stuff that reinforces you in your position. So it's ever so easy to become entrenched and increasingly polarised. Now, obviously, none of this is news to you, but I think it's good to remember that as we face different situations that we come to. And I refer back to Snoopy. Has it ever occurred to us that we might be wrong? It's so easy to think that we have all the answers. Now, we may think that evangelical Christians are different, much more clear thinking, but I wonder if we are more affected by the world that we live in than we realise. Who isn't guilty of only reading the things that they know will be sound or good or have from authors that other people have told you are really respected? And therefore they share the same opinions that we already have. Or who's honest enough to acknowledge that sometimes they've heard or seen something and then jumped to a conclusion without stopping to investigate more? Who saw Justin Welby on the screen and pre-decided that they probably wouldn't like what he was going to say because they weren't very keen on him? It's quite interesting, isn't it, how our preconceptions and the things that we bring to a situation colour it. Only this week I had someone tell me that they were really unhappy that we were doing the difference course. I was a bit puzzled and I asked why. And it was because that they thought it was about affirming same-sex relationships. Just to be really clear, it's not. That is not mentioned in the course in any way whatsoever. Sexuality doesn't specifically come up. But that conversation perfectly illustrated how sometimes we hear something and then we extrapolate on to something completely different without pausing to really find out what it's about. Which, in fact, is why we're doing the course, to try and help us navigate these areas of conflict and controversy in a bit more Christ-like way, rather than to leap to conclusions and demonise those who think differently to us. And those kind of smaller conflict areas that I just mentioned, of course, come in a bigger context, as Justin Welby mentioned, of terrific global crisis. And even since he recorded this, we have all the war in the Ukraine and the situation in Israel and Gaza. All those things are since those videos were made. Frankly, our world's a bit terrifying at the moment, I think. But sadly, it's not all just out there. It's closer to home as well. Luckily, not with guns and bombs, but sometimes with harsh words or judgment or relational grenades. If we're completely honest, I expect many of us will be aware that there are historically a pile of broken relationships in Swanage. Perhaps you've been unfortunate enough to be part of some of those. Conflict can be really destructive for us as God's people and for his kingdom. But don't think for one minute I'm pointing an accusing finger on from some high horse. I'm definitely not. I have my own relational baggage too, as many of you know. Things are often a lot more complicated and more messy than we would like them to be. But it's into this messy, broken world that Jesus speaks those words from the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the peacemakers. We're called to live differently. Each verse in that Sermon on the Mount, in that passage in Matthew, is really challenging. But it's that verse, verse 9, that we're focusing on this Lent. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Now, who doesn't love the idea of peace? I mean, peace is always attractive, isn't it? The Messiah prophesied in Isaiah that we remember at Christmas is the Prince of Peace. The risen Jesus spoke at Easter words of peace over his disciples. Peace is a huge blessing of the gospel. And if you've spent much time looking at the Bible, you will be familiar with the idea that the Jewish idea of peace is much richer than our bit wishy-washy English version of the word peace. The Bible word is shalom, and it's a positive state of wholeness and richness and flourishing and completeness, not just merely an absence of conflict, which we in the West often mistake for peace. And making peace is what the gospel is all about. That's why I started with that big story of God. Because at its heart, it's about reconciliation. God repairing the relationships, the making of peace between God and humankind. The Bible story starts in a beautiful garden, a garden where God and man and woman walk freely. But then the humans disobey God and are banished. The relationship's broken. How can it be mended? And that, of course, is the story of the Bible. The end of the story, as we read in Revelation 21 and 22, is a beautiful city. And there we will see the reuniting of those who have been separated. Once more, God and humanity will dwell together. The church, the people of God, will be comprised of people from every nation, every ethnicity, colour, sexuality, politics, age, wealth, all different kinds of people from across God's world. God's new creation will be full of all sorts, as our poster outside says, in harmony together with him and with each other. Back to Spring Harvest. I don't know if you were there any time, I don't know, probably the beginning of this century. And there were loads of Salt Mine doing theatre sketches. I used to love the theatre sketches at Salt Mine. And they had a fantastic one where it was about heaven. And somebody was arriving at heaven and they were being shown round. And there were all sorts of different sections for different churches. There was the Catholic section, and it would tell you about that. And anyway, and then there was a section out in the garden. Please don't go over there. They think they're the only ones here. And we often have that idea, don't we? Our version is the right version. But actually, we're going to find out when we get to the new creation that there's a lot more people there than we probably thought, who don't look like what we thought they would look like. And this reconciliation, this bringing together of those who were apart, that is the story of the Bible. it's good to be reminded that making peace is what the gospel's about. It's not an extra for those who are particularly nice or good at it. Making peace is the gospel. It's a big deal for God. That is why Jesus came. That reconciliation, bringing people together. This is the big story of the gospel that we're supposed to be part of. Which is why Jesus came, to seek and save the lost. To bring reconciliation between those who were estranged. To bring reconciliation between God and humankind. God reconciling the world to himself in that first reading that Stuart brought us from 2 Corinthians. And in that passage it said, and God has committed to us that message of reconciliation. Now, when we read those verses in 2 Corinthians, the most obvious application is to reaching out, to evangelism, to telling people who don't know God about God. But it's bigger than that, as Justin Welby said. The ministry of reconciliation doesn't stop there. For to be an agent of reconciliation is to be, in practical terms, a peacemaker. As Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Notice how it's part of our identity. To be a peacemaker is to be a child of God. Clearly, it's critical. And yet it's really hard in practice, isn't it? What does it actually mean to be a peacemaker in practice? Well, it's always good when you're asking a question like that to look at Jesus. How does he do it in practice? And we see that he doesn't fly in as some elite superhero, deliver a solution and then disappear. He lives it out. He's incarnational. He's there amongst us, working in the middle of the messy, ordinary, irritating people that he came into contact with. He too was exposed to a fragility, to parents who didn't understand him, to relationships that went wrong, to limitations and disappointments. He knew what it was like to be let down, misunderstood, betrayed, and yet he still operated in love. He was a peacemaker in the way that he operated and navigated life. But we need to be clear that being a peacemaker is not the same as being a peacekeeper. I spent a lot of my life thinking that being a peacemaker meant that you never rocked the boat. You were always trying to smooth over the conflict, squash any negativity. I was under the impression that peacemaking was about preventing anyone disagreeing in any way whatsoever. But I've discovered the hard way that actually that's not the way to go. Smoothing over conflict is not peacemaking. Actually, avoiding conflict at all costs is more likely to spring from cowardice than godliness. It's more likely to be the result of fear than the result of a desire for flourishing and wholeness. And actually, avoiding conflict doesn't help us in the long term. It can often mean that issues just grow and go underground and are never dealt with. What we actually need to do is to tackle conflict in a constructive, thoughtful, respectful way. So being a real peacemaker can take a lot of courage as well as time. I guess that's the other challenge. This is not something that happens instantly or quickly. It's so much easier just to kind of like walk away from something or hide away or ignore issues or try and smooth things over so you don't have to deal with them. That is definitely a quicker option. But will anything change? Will peacemaking mean that we actually have to rock the boat rather than try and keep it level? We do see that in Jesus' life, don't we? He didn't spend all his time just trying to calm everybody down. Sometimes Jesus says really controversial things to actually stir things up and to bring conflict out into the open. And some of his stories that he tells are really subversive. Being a peacemaker may involve bringing unspoken things to light so they can be tackled. Jesus makes it clear that conflict isn't wrong. But of course, the way that we do it can be wrong. We mustn't think that any form of conflict is good. Many of us have been on the wrong end of ungodly anger, of bitter tongues, of harsh words. So don't hear me saying that any old version of conflict is good. Yes, Jesus does make it clear that conflict isn't wrong, but we must do it in the right way, a way that ultimately will build peace. We don't see Jesus being rude or aggressive or unkind. He invites us to live differently, radically. He wants to bring transformation to our relationships. But it's so easy, isn't it, to get stuck in unhelpful patterns of behaviour, so much so that we don't even always see them. I wonder if you can identify within yourself. Maybe we are overtly harsh and critical of others. Maybe we're brilliant at jumping to conclusions, making 2 and 2 add 17, and then telling somebody else about it. Maybe we're easily aggressive or get very angry when people challenge us, or we're touchy about a few things. Maybe we complain a lot, and we complain about other people, but not to them, just to other people. But we never actually go and see the people that we're complaining about. Or maybe we just can't see how our everyday choices cause pain and suffering to other people in our world. No doubt we've all got our own unhelpful patterns of behaviour that we can't see. But I'm sure the rest of the people who you live with or your close friends will be able to tell you if you're not quite sure what they are. Just ask them. They can tell you. But we need God's help to find a new way to communicate and address difficult things in ways that bring that real peace and shalom and wholeness that God wants us to have. And we need different habits. We need to grow different ways of being. Lent is quite a helpful period of time. I think the psychologists tell you that 40 days is about the right length of time you need to build a new habit. And we need to find new habits, new ways to address conflict. And some of these things are the kind of things that we're going to look at in this course over the next, and in Sunday mornings in the next few weeks. But for now, let's recommit ourselves to this ministry of reconciliation and recognize that we are but human. Embrace the fact that we are fractured, fragile, imperfect, but we are forgiven. We are works in progress. And the Bible tells the story of numerous broken, vulnerable people who become instruments of God's grace. God can work through us despite our failings. Whew. In fact, maybe our willingness to acknowledge our failings and our weakness and our mess, those will be the actual things that help us to be good peacemakers. So we need to go on this journey together, choosing to actively be part of that big story of God, the story of peace and reconciliation.